Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the February issue of Good Housekeeping magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is about Amy Grant and Vince Gill. He's got a temper, she's stubborn. And between the two of them, they had enough baggage to last a lifetime. But Amy Grant and Vince Gill have forged a fantastic marriage. Here's how The Second Time's a Charm. This article is by Jennifer Graham Kaiser. Ask Vince Gill and Amy Grant what makes a marriage great, and their answers come tumbling out, not a whit of time for reflection required. You can laugh together easily, and trust each other, and spend lots of time together, and have great fun in bed. Yes, a fabulous sex life, and on they go. These two are no shrinking violets when it comes to the topic of love. Gill, 52, a renowned singer, songwriter, guitarist, and icon of country music. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2007, and Grant, at 49, the best-selling artist in contemporary Christian music, are about to celebrate 10 years of joyful marriage. And while they seem to be soulmates, they didn't simply fall into place storybook style. Each had been married before and had to navigate the choppy waters of divorce. Each had offspring with a previous spouse, and they discovered that blending the families took serious work. And then there was the strong of bad publicity surrounding their union and their alleged improprieties, which even caused Amy's religious faith to be called into question. There were hard choices to be made in the name of love, and the rippling effects of those choices. And the story is still unfolding. Marriage Southern Style. It's hard to envision megastars like Gill and Grant leading a leisurely, no-rush life, but in fact, that's just what they've engineered. Their home, located on a cul-de-sac in Nashville, isn't the glitzy mansion you might expect of music industry royalty. Tasteful and subdued. It has the spirit of an old-fashioned country home. Flowers border the front lawn. The scent of honeysuckle tinges the air. And half a dozen rocking chairs idle on a generous porch, along with a tail-wagging mutt named Chester. The home is a throwback to another era, a time before IMing and date-night scheduling, when romance blossomed while lingering over iced tea and listening to a country ballad. It's a clear and purposeful haven for Gill and Grant, who also work here, writing music and recording in their just-finished home studio. "Two nights ago, I was out on the porch swing," says Grant. "Vince just came and plunked down, and we talked about the day. He's not ever in a hurry, in a conversation, or with a kiss, and that's really rare in a man." As she talks, Gill leans in closer to Grant. He appears to have something to add, but she's not done, so he holds his thought till she's finished. "I think the quality of our relationship, the romance in it, it's him," she continues. "I think a woman can have all of the ideas and mental pictures. She can be a real planner and a motivator, but in the end, I think a woman does best when she responds to a man. You can't make a man be romantic. You can't make him slow down if he doesn't want to slow down. Gill smiles and shrugs. "I'm just grateful to spend time with her," he says. 10 years into their marriage, he still longs to be around her and admits he feels adrift when they're apart, playing concerts out of town. "We talk several times a day," says Gill. "I want to. I find myself going, I don't want to call her too much or she thinks I'm nuts. But it's when I feel safest, when I'm talking to her." There's a noticeable and natural ease about this partnership, with Gill's even keel setting the tone. But like all couples, they have their moments. "He has a quick temper," Grant says, and I'm stubborn as the day is long. Through our early lives, we came to understand that you can make the choices you make, and if you screw those up, then you learn to make new choices. Somebody who has been in a very bad wreck is going to be very conscientious about not speeding through a yellow light. You just learn so many good lessons when you go through a failed marriage. If we had married at 21 and 24, it would have been completely different. The long, messy road behind. Grant and Gil have been schooled by love's complications. While their paths crossed in 1993, both were married, Gil to country star Janice Oliver, Grant to Christian musician Gary Chapman, with children. They met at a taping for Gil's Christmas TV special, on which Grant was a guest performer. The connection there between us, that was kind of rare, Gil told Larry King in 2003. The hang was easy. The conversation was easy. The Christmas shows became a yearly collaboration and the backdrop of a growing friendship. November would roll around and I'd go, "Hey, we're doing that Christmas show again." Grant told King, "In my mind, I justified it. He can be my friend." Though they have always maintained that there was no infidelity, during Gil's divorce, he and Grant would reportedly prepare to sign affidavits saying so. There was no hiding their emotional connection, both on stage and off stage. Gossip columnists noticed it too. So did both of their spouses. Gil's ex-wife Janice reportedly told her sister that she initially tolerated the close friendship he struck up with Grant. But Janice said when she found a handwritten note from Grant saying, "I love you, Amy," in her husband's golf bag, she unsuccessfully asked Gil to cut his ties with Grant. In 1997, the Gills divorced. There was never like a magic plan. "I'm going to do this, and a couple years later, Amy, you go do this," Gil told King. "I got a divorce and said, well, I think she'll probably stay in her marriage. I really did." Grant, who learned of Gil's divorce by reading about it in the newspaper, was in the midst of her own marital woes. "The real pain of it is trying to take the high road," Grant told King. "But when you have such an easy rapport with another person, what it really does, it highlights where you don't have an easy rapport." She and Chapman tried marriage counseling, but began divorce mediation in 1998. Grant then moved out of the family home and filed for divorce in 1999, with the marriage officially ending that June. During this time, Chapman was being quoted as saying he literally, on his knees, begged Grant not to leave. In one of her own interviews at the time, Grant said a counselor told her, "God made marriage for people. He didn't make people for marriage. He didn't create the institution so he could just plug people into it. He provided this so that people could enjoy each other to the fullest." But Gil and Grant weren't just any celebrities swapping partners, as celebrities often do. Gil was known for his good guy image as much as he was for his guitar. And Grant was the most prominent Christian entertainer of her generation. Not surprisingly, her divorce upset many of her fans, who viewed marriage vows as a spiritual covenant not to be broken. Christian commenters debated whether a performer like Grant, who influenced others in Christ's name and benefited financially from it also, should be held to a particularly high moral standard. Some Christian radio stations stopped playing Grant's music. She remained mum on the topic at the time, refusing to enter the fray. Today she speaks thoughtfully and evenly about the media firestorm that swirled around her in those days, as much as the comments on the sanctity of marriage. Grant recalls she had a stalker worries. "I didn't mean this in a flippant way, but I was so unconcerned by what somebody who I never met wrote in a rag," she said. "I felt like I had flipped a car over three medians, and I was trying to figure out if my children, if we still had a pulse. I could not imagine going through life not by Vince's side. Then I'd hear people saying, 'I heard so-and-so,' and say, 'So-and-so's not playing your records.' I had to trust that eventually everything was going to be okay." In fact, both their careers weathered the criticism. The year of her divorce, Grant went on a successful concert tour. Several months after her divorce was finalized, she and Gil began to see each other in public as a couple. And a little less than a year later, in March of 2000, in a fairy tale like ceremony on a hill, they married and embarked on a happily ever after life. Of course, they weren't traveling alone. There were kids in tow. Gil's daughter, Jenny, then 17, and Grant's three children, Matthew, Millie, and Sarah, who ranged in age from 12 to 7. It was a long haul to feel like a family again, said Grant. The parents had made a choice, but none of the kids had made the choice. And wherever it's going to wind up, you're not going to get there quickly. You just have to give people their space. Blending the two families was an arduous and sometimes painful process. There have been lots of hand-down, pivotal turning points with a lot of words and tons of emotions, Grant says. When asked for specifics, the couples clam up. Says Gil, when I went through my divorce, there were some things printed in a certain magazine, and I despised the way it made my kid look. So as a parent, there's a side of you that builds up a wall and says, you can ask all you want, but you're not going to get any of that stuff. Even in the face of the challenges, Gil and Grant made a point of always acknowledging the past. The one thing we never try to do is to say that life began for us the moment we said, I do, Grant says. A whole lot of life had gone on before that, and it was worth and time and integrating in a healthy way. Gil and Grant's daughter, Karina, now 8, was born a year after they were married. She and Sarah currently live with Grant and Gil. The three oldest now live on their own. Karina's birth was a great blessing for us, says Gil. All of a sudden, we all had something in common. We didn't know it at the time, but it really provided a sense of glue. Meanwhile, the passage of time, plain and simple, has helped to mend the double fractures of divorce and public chastisement. From time to time, it still comes up, and you want to say, come on, we've beat this up, and we've beat it into the dirt, Gil says. But we just dismiss it in a way that is respectful. He recalls a day when a man approached him in a guitar store. I'd never met him, Gil said. And he said, I owe you an apology. When you and Amy got married, I told my children that you were wrong, and now I'm going through a divorce. At that moment, Gil was glad that he never lashed out at finger waggers. Not all Christians feel and act and do things exactly the same, he says. If you always try to take the high road, then everyone has a chance to benefit. Now the couple say their happiness draws heavily on lessons learned from youthful missteps and from the early days of their union. There's no such thing as riding off into the sunset, says Grant. You get into a second marriage and you go. Oh, man, some of those weird dynamics, those were just me, and I've dragged them into the future. Laughing heartily, she adds, you say to yourself, I shouldn't have been so hard on that first chapter. She recalls the time that her propensity for running behind schedule made them both late for an engagement. We got in the car, she says, giggling at the memory of it, and Vince says, I'm feeling a lot of empathy for your first husband. Similarly, Grant says of Gil, I'm glad I'm the second wife. I don't know what it was like the first time around, but for the most part now, he's very patient and level. She tests his patience from time to time, Grant admits. Halfway through a trip to Africa last summer with the whole family, we were in this little two-room thatched roof building, and I was really proud of him because he didn't ever lose his temper or mutter under his breath or any of the things that men do. And I opened the doors between our room and the room where Jenny and Millie were. I had probably been in there 10 minutes, and I said, Jenny, your dad has become so patient. And as soon as the word patient came out of my mouth, I hear him say, Amy? I had left the bathroom water running, and the entire floor of the room, our suitcases, it was all soaked. And the door slammed, and Jenny said, Oh, gosh, I hope my dad's not yelling at your mom. And Millie said, I never have heard your dad yell at my mom. which is interesting. I do a lot of things that are easy to yell at. In fact, Grant's penchant for leaving appliances on, irons, stoves, faucets, has earned her a nickname at home. Absent-minded professor, says Gil, laughing. I just follow her around the house with fire extinguishers, putting out the flames. But the pair has also learned how to turn their relationship issues into personal grounds for a strong and respectful marriage. Though these guidelines may sound simple, it's the following through on them, Grant and Gil admits, that can be challenging. Here are some of their suggestions. Know when not to talk. Granted, communication is the cornerstone of a good marriage, but there's true value in knowing when not to speak. When we first got married, we got sideways about something, Gil recalls. I could tell she was firing up to really unload on me. I said, hold on. If you just take a second and be still, you might not say some of the things you'll regret. If you start saying things, then I'll start saying things. And it wound up being a pretty good pattern for us. Now if we get sideways, we let a little time go by. And then you can attack it without your anger coming through. Being a great companion is more about what you don't say than what you do say. Be ready to pinpoint a problem. Grant has had the same "you never help me around the house" complaints as many wives. Hers tends to come out at the holidays when she and Gil host dozens of relatives. And notes Grant, I have that tradition from my grandmother and my mom to have all the tables set up, everything with a tablecloth, and you pull out your best whatever. It's Southern, and there were several years that I was grinding an axe pretty hard because Vince was watching a ball game. I would just go, I can't believe that I'm in here doing all this stuff, and he's totally content to sit in there. I would get really bent out of shape, and when I tried to talk to him, I'd be all snippy, and he'd say, if you will just ask me, I'll do it. And I'd say, but I don't want to have to ask you. I want you to notice what I'm doing and just jump in. It took me several years to realize what he was saying. I have been through so much counseling, and Vince has been through some too, and I think at some point you have to realize, this angst I'm feeling is real, but I have to learn to say, will you help me set up these tables, rather than building a big head of steam. Get off your soapbox. I think that most people are more concerned about being right than they are about being kind or forgiving, Gil says. As I get older, I don't care as much about whether I'm right. There's never that friction of, well, my point is, what I'm saying is right, and what you're saying is wrong. This, in turn, allows Grant to let her own guard down. The great thing about really liking somebody is that I want to get along, she says. Usually you can sort of tell if you're discussing something that it doesn't matter equally to both people. If you are inclined to have peace between you, it's okay. This matters more to you than it does to me, even if you're not particularly thrilled with how things pan out. Take, for instance, the leather couch that Gil was getting for his home office. He had made his selection, but then, without telling him, Grant went ahead and changed his order, opting for a lighter shade instead. We just kept them, he said, acknowledging that it clearly mattered to her much more than it did to him. And then later she says, honey, I think yours would have looked better. Kick the kindness up a notch. Grant recalls a time a few years into their marriage when she got an advanced level seminar on this subject and turned her attitude around. It happened on a bike outing, an attempt at couple time. They went downhill fast. In previous years, the pair had usually golfed together. Gil is an accomplished player. He's even installed a putting green in their yard. But that year, Grant threw herself into a new passion, biking. He didn't really like it, says Grant. But I said, please go with me. And he went. Problem was, he was a little slow. I forgot that when you first start, it's really tiring to ride a bike, says Grant. I was behind him, and I shouted at him, is this as fast as you're going to go? Then she passed him. Or as Gil grumbles, "You left me in the dust." In mock disgrace, Grant buries her face in her hands. They both double over in laughter. How did it end? Gil pulled his bike alongside his wife's. As Grant remembers, Gil said, "How would you feel if I teed off and then said, 'See you at the next tee?'" Grant reconsidered her motivation that day. "What was my ultimate goal there?" she said. "I was acting like I wanted to go do something with him, but really I wanted to work out, and I learned a good lesson the hard way." Keeping the faith. This philosophy extends beyond how Grant and Gil treat each other. They're dedicated to giving back. Grant's notion of, quote, not working, she's been taking a break from performing after releasing She Colors My Day last May, is actually a schedule of chock-a-block with benefits concerts, fundraising appearances, hospital wing dedications, salutes to heroes, and nonprofit kickoffs. Gil, meanwhile, presides over his own expansive humanitarian efforts. Most famously, there's the annual Vinnie Pro Celebrity Invitation Golf Tournament, which helps support junior golf programs in Tennessee and gives money to a host of other charities. Between the two of them, they have supported sick children, wounded veterans, extraordinary women, MS sufferers, community activists, the mentally ill, Africans in poverty, and a growing list of aid organizations that count on the couple's fame to raise awareness. A few days after this interview, in fact, Grant will host a giant yard sale in a nearby university parking lot with dozens of volunteers and scores of donated items, many from Grant's own closet, all to raise money for two local charities. "Everything that Vince and I do, all of it has come out of these relationships," she said. "You know someone and then say, 'Oh my gosh, her husband's been diagnosed with what? Of course I'll help raise money for that.'" Life is all about investing in people. And then tragedy strikes, and it pulls you together. And then you reinvest. It's a constant cycle. Gil nods in agreement. "I hadn't set out to be the giver of all things," he says. "It's just people ask, and we say yes more." A strong spiritual undercurrent runs beneath their drive to help others, but Grant chooses her words carefully when discussing it. She realizes that she is one of the faces who represent the marketable Christian industry, but she's troubled by certain elements of that industry. The toughest thing as a believer is to see how Christianity is pigeonholed into this one did you get the memo on how to vote kind of thing, she says. "I'm somebody who feels very spiritually alive, and prayer is an integral part of my daily life, along with confession, worship, all of those things. But I see how all that's been quantified and made a caricature of, and I don't want to add to a cultural experience that turns people off." Gil calls himself a novice of Christianity. "I didn't grow up in the church the way Amy did," he says. "That is not to say, yay me, but because I don't have all the rules drilled into my head and all of that, I feel like I do it from an honest place and live my life serving people, lifting her up, being kind and compassionate." There it is again, the word kindness. Gil considers it and says, "A big reason why our relationship is so good is that it begins with respect and kindness. If you have those two things on the front burner, then the rest is kind of easy." Grant gazes at her husband as if considering this blessing and smiles. Our next article is called Virtual Vows by Danny Shapiro. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I was looking forward to a relaxed visit with my Aunt Shirley, my father's youngest sister, and my last remaining tie to his family. But as she ushered me in through the front door, Shirley seemed distracted. "Sweetheart, I have a surprise," she said. "We're going to a wedding." "A wedding?" I said. I looked down at my jeans. "I didn't tell you before because I was afraid you wouldn't come," she said. alluding to the rift in my parents' generation that had kept us apart for most of our lives. Naomi, Joanne's youngest, is getting married today, in Chicago. It'll be just a few minutes. I had no idea what was going on. My aunt lived near Boston. Perhaps I misheard her. All right, this is the best I can do, Shirley said. She changed into an elegant suit. The doorbell rang, and in came the wife of one of my cousin's son. Over the years, this religiously observant part of my family had become like a village. Shirley had 4 children, 20 grandchildren, and 32 great-grandchildren. Here were 4 of them, little boys and girls in suits and party dresses. Uncle Mo is already upstairs, Shirley said. Come. In the master bedroom, Mo, ailing with Parkinson's disease, was sitting in a wheelchair, wearing black trousers and a dress shirt. A large computer monitor had been set up on a rolling cart. With a few keystrokes, the screen was suddenly filled with a crowded ballroom. See, Shirley turned to me. I told you we were going to a wedding. Someone was holding a laptop on the other end, slowly panning the Chicago ballroom, and by doing so was giving these grandparents a front row seat. Will you look at that? Shirley smiled. Mo, can you see? My uncle's eyes were glued to the screen. Through the shaking handheld laptop, we watched as the groom walked down the aisle, flanked by his parents. He reached the wedding canopy and turned to face the screen. Mazel tov, he mouthed. Naomi took place next to her husband-to-be and gave a small wave to her grandparents. We watched as the 7 marriage blessings were recited. Shirley held Mo's hands. The great-grandchildren sat on the floor next to the wheelchair. Were those tears in my uncle's eyes? I couldn't tell. In a few minutes, the ceremony concluded with the breaking of the glass. But before the new husband and wife even looked at each other, they both turned into the screen and spoke to the 93-year-old man and 86-year-old woman, who were simply too old and frail to make the trip. Mazel tov, Graham, Naomi called. Mazel tov, Grandpa. Mazel tov, sweetheart, Shirley called. Mazel tov, Mayor. In Chicago, guests began to dance. The woman with the woman and the men with the men in ever-widening circles. And in Boston, Shirley reached her hands out to her granddaughter, to her great-granddaughters, and to me. She was regal, incandescent, as we danced around Mo's wheelchair, our circle connecting the generations to that ballroom and far beyond. This was written by Danny Shapiro. Her memoir, Devotion, is out this month. She and her family live in Connecticut. In the section, On Your Side, here are some helpful tips from the Good Housekeeping Research Institute. Their question is, are you overpaying on your cell phone bill? It is quite possible if you've had your plan for a while and your usage habits have changed. For example, you're sending more text messages or your kids now have mobile phones. Look critically at your bill and at how your family uses their phones, and whether they'd like to add services such as web browsing, email, or GPS. Then ask your carrier if they can offer a plan that's a better fit. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode from Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.